seen Chris?
I assume he's online because I'm dialing him in.
Okay, good.
He's showing up green.
Oh, good. Oh, Christopher.
Hello.
Hey, Christopher. Christopher Robbins. Where's
that's
Winnie?
Not me. She's
no, no. Winnie is a boy.
Winnie the Pooh.
I thought you meant Winnie Cooper.
Oh, wow. Wow. You see where your mind goes right to.
Well, isn't that the girl from Wonder Years?
Sure is.
Yeah.
Okay. Hmm? When you said where my mind goes, I thought maybe I accidentally said something dirtier.
No, no, no. I just thought, well, maybe it's possible then that you, maybe when you're a young man, young boy, you may have had a crush on Winnie Cooper.
I might have.
There you go. How is everyone this fine morning?
Good. I'm drinking cheer wine, so I'm very cheerful.
It's a little early for cheer wine, Mike.
Yeah, 8:30 in the morning.
Hey, it's just like drinking coffee. I mean, there's no difference.
I guess if you put a whole bunch of sugar in your coffee.
Yeah. Coffee's not good for you.
Oh, coffee's wonderful. I have dark roast coffee, and it's very healthy for you.
No, it's not.
I think it isn't. Aren't there studies saying that coffee is good for a variety of things?
I think in moderation, it's not bad for you. No,
in moderation.
I have a cup a day. I have one cup a day.
Well, I have one cheer wine a day in moderation.
See, I don't think that's as good for you.
It is good for you.
All right, we'll agree to disagree on that one.
Oh, but one a day is not bad though. As a treat.
One what? Coffee?
If you're only having one cheer wine a day, it's not bad.
Oh, I don't have one cheer wine a day. I wish I could.
I gave you a chance there, but
it's hit or miss, man. I go to the hardware store, and sometimes they have them. The lady even told me, she said, that's like their most popular drink. Everybody takes them. So I cleaned them out this last time. I just took them all. They only had 7 of them, but I still have 3 more.
The only place where I can find it locally, well, I haven't looked a lot, but we have a premier like gourmet place, and they have a variety of single bottles of more unusual sodas.
Yeah.
So there's
one that I like. I actually like more than cheer wine. It's called Pig Cola. I love that cola.
I've never had that.
Oh my God, it's good.
But yeah, why is it so expensive on Amazon?
I don't know. It's like 5 times. I don't know. It's like incredibly high.
It just doesn't make sense.
I would like to have them in can format, though, just because they're easier to lug around than a bottle.
Well, here on Amazon,
for home, it's good to have a bottle.
Six cans. Only 6 cans. $10.
Yeah. That should be a 12-pack.
You can get a 12-pack.
A 12-pack for $5. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get
it. So it must not be sold by Amazon, but by like just somebody selling their stuff on Amazon, so they're marking it up.
It could be, but I mean, even regular drinks, like whether it's Pepsi or Coke, I think are usually more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why, but
I would
whatever.
Think so because of shipping. I mean, they can't just ship it like they ship our trades. I mean, that it would explode.
You're right.
And it has to have something in there so they don't.
Yeah. Because here we have three of those 12 packs of Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
$6. Who's going to pay $10 when you could just walk to the store and get it for half price? And a lot of times they get, they, you know, buy two, get one for free.
Yeah.
So whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah, I don't like coffee. So my mine comes from soda in the morning. I need to get the jump start. Or I'm dragging ass. That's what happens. So it's just really? Like yeah. coffee for me.
Oh, well.
You get conditioned to that too, though. Like, I used to drink coffee, but the caffeine was too much for me. And I slowly weaned myself back to, I just have green tea now in the morning.
Yeah.
Doesn't tea by definition have caffeine?
I think some teas
do. Yeah, it just has less. Yeah, it has, like, black tea has less than coffee, and then green tea has even less.
Black tea, right?
Yeah. Even less than black tea. So I still have a little bit of caffeine, but it's
caffeine is addictive though, because like you could get a headache if you try to wean yourself off. I mean, because your body gets used to it.
That's why you wean yourself off it. You can get a headache if you quit cold turkey.
Yeah.
But not only that, but I think you have to been used to a lot of caffeine every day. Like my wife's mom drinks coffee nonstop. And so when she decided to go away from it, or maybe she gave it up for Lent or something like that, she started getting headaches because her body was relying on the caffeine. If I stopped drinking coffee, it wouldn't make any difference to me at all, because I have very little caffeine during the day.
Yeah. That's if you drink a lot, you gotta cut back slowly instead of just all at once.
Just like heroin. If you only have, you know, a little bit of heroin once every few days, yeah, you can just stop and you don't get the shakes.
Yeah, most heroin users are you tend towards moderation.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Yep.
Well, yeah, some of these, I was on Facebook and they're making like these cupcakes out of King's Hawaiian biscuits.
Really?
Yeah, they look delicious. Holy mackerel. They're like cream-filled donuts. They're making donuts out of them.
Oh, that's interesting.
I do like King's Hawaiian biscuits. They have like a sweet texture to them. They're light and they're sweet.
I've never had the biscuits. I've only had the rolls. The rolls.
That's what I mean. The rolls. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They're very. You're right. They're very light and sweet. My daughter absolutely loves them. So she just wants them with butter.
Yeah, they're good. You can eat them plain without butter, and they're tasty.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I do like some bread.
I do too.
It's the only time I like beer. I love beer bread.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, beer bread? Yeah, I like beer bread. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't really like beer all that much. No, I'll drink it, but I don't like it.
I think I might have told you when Nick and God, his name is escaping me. What's the name of the gentleman who was filling in for Martin for like a month? Craig Gunderson.
Gunderson, yeah.
Yeah. So when the two of them, they had a beer episode and they're talking about all these different like types of beer and stuff like
that. Yeah.
Well, let me try. So I really, really went out of my way to see if I could like different
get
beers.
Drunk? You really went out of your way to get drunk.
No, just to try like different things. I just can't get into it. There's very, very few that I found palatable. And even those, it's like if I was at a restaurant or even at home, I would never go out of my way to
order it. Yeah.
That's right. I would get something else I like much, much better.
Well, the only time I ever drank any beer really is at Heroes Con. I'd have like one or two beers and then I would be done. Like that's it for the year. I wouldn't want any more because it's not my drink of choice. It's just,
Yeah.
I never acquired a taste for it. I'm kind of glad I didn't either, because I'd rather spend my money on comics.
Very true.
Yeah, I'm not with you guys. I like beer a lot.
You like a good beer?
Yeah.
Like what
I
kind of
don't
beer
drink
do you
it.
enjoy?
I like a lot of different kinds of beer, but I like IPAs and dark beers like stouts and porters and stuff like that and
IPAs are
ales and
hoppy, are the hoppier beer, right? Yeah.
yeah. But yeah, I like beer. I like trying different beers, craft beers and stuff. I don't. It's more of like a special treat now, though. Like I only have like a couple. I have like two or three beers in a month. You know, I have like one on a weekend, and maybe not even every weekend. You know, I used to drink more than that, but. Now it's more of like a treat, but I do enjoy it them. But I think there could be something to it being a acquired taste and
Let me ask you
sometimes
this.
work
When,
with partner
let me
everyone
ask
likes
you
it.
this, if you can remember, go back time when you had your first beer. Did you like it because of the taste, or did you like it because it was a buzzy, like it made you feel different?
I mean, I think
And
beers
did you
that I had
acquire the
early
taste
on.
over time?
Well, when I first drank beer, like in high school,
You mean when you turn 21?
yeah, I don't think they can like go back in time and I don't know what the statute of limitations is on that. I'm not gonna say how I got. I'm not gonna say how I got that beer. Actually, it was like a friend's parents that bought it for us,
Was nice.
and yeah, I mean, and looking back, it's
What are
like
their
really
names
it
and their
was really
addresses?
irresponsible. Yeah.
Can you tell us that so we can document this and have them arrested?
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, looking back, that was really irresponsible of them. And it backfired, and they stopped doing it because we ended up making a mess of their house.
Sure.
But yeah, they would, as long as we stayed there, as long as we didn't go anywhere. But yeah, I wasn't very responsible of them. But yeah, so that was cheap beer, and we drank it because we wanted to get drunk, and we liked the buzz and stuff like that. So I mean, I don't think I cared one way or the other at the time. I don't think that contributed or is the reason that I like beer now, though, really, because
Well, now you like the taste. You like savor it. Now it's like a
I it,
taste thing.
well, and it's much better beer too.
Yeah, tr
I
true,
still don't.
but
I
like,
still don't like the
I'm just
beer I
trying to
drank back
figure
then.
out if beer is something you acquire, like you acquire a taste for, or you like it right off the bat.
Yeah, I think it's like anything. It could be a little of both. I mean, some people don't like tomatoes, and they never will or are going to like tomatoes. I hate beets. Nothing's going to convince me that beets are any good. I didn't like them when I was a kid, and
Even Bill Bulmer? Because Bill Bulmer will eat beets like nobody's business.
yeah, and I just
You sure he can't
that
convince
just
you?
seems
Like
insane to me.
he
No,
can't
he
peer
can't.
pressure you into it at a convention? Like, have some beets, Chris. Come on. Have
Everyone
some
else is eating
beets.
them. Come on,
They're
Chris,
good
have a
for
beet.
you. They're very
Yeah.
healthy and nutritious.
I'm too old for peer pressure. I do not give a shit.
I never
Fitting
did.
it.
That's why I didn't drink beer.
Yeah.
Yup.
But I had good friends because they knew I didn't want it,
Yeah.
and they never like encourage. They were drinking. I fine with that, you know. But I never was peer pressured into like have a beer. I never had to take the sippy cup, like in the what was that movie? The Bad Boys or whatever it's called. Have you seen it yet?
Oh, I haven't.
It's about a bunch of
No.
kids. They're much younger. Man, they must have been in like middle school. But it's pretty funny.
I remember seeing commercials for it, but I didn't put that one on my list.
They peer pressured one of the kids because they called him Sippy Cup, because he wouldn't take a sip of the beer. Because it was cool to drink a sip of a beer. Oh, I had two sips. Oh, I had three sips.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I was really never a peer pressure person. I really couldn't care any less on what everyone else was doing.
Yeah. I just knew my dad liked beer and it stunk. That's all I knew.
My dad would have it on occasion, like at a,
And my
a
dad never
family
gets like the
gathering.
good beers, like the beers that everybody, oh, this is good. He gets the beer like, could I have a Coors?
Right.
Could I have a Schlitz? I mean, it was a Corona. He does like his Corona.
He's got to be careful with that. I heard
Yeah.
you can get sick from that.
Yep.
So,
Yeah, I still don't like that kind of beer.
no.
That I think maybe is, well, Corona's, I mean, I guess they're okay. They're better than some stuff, but yeah, that kind of, some of that like cheaper beer, I think maybe is just an acquired taste, but some of the better beers, the craft beers and stuff like that, I think they generally taste good.
So Rob, are you getting flooded with refunds from DCBS like I am?
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I'm not understanding. I don't think I understand what I talked to you last week. They haven't for now. If I go on DCBS, now I have two lines of shipments saying next shipment, my actual shipment, and something else that just says the biweekly one. So I'm not sure what's going on, but so I haven't
I
gotten the
bet you,
stuff
I
yet.
bet you, I bet you it's because you have a lot of collected editions coming from DC or something.
I don't know, but to answer your question, yes. And so with the new previews, it's like so many resellers. It's how do I know what I need to reorder? And am I going to have to go through every
No,
single?
no, no, no. You'll have to like reorder. If they cancel it, then you'll have to reorder it. If it shows up in the next previews, whenever that comes, which should be the next one. And
Yeah.
you got to remember that DC doesn't have a previews anymore.
I know. So what? How am I supposed? How is that going to work?
You have to go to DCComics.com and search for DC Connect,
DC
and you
Connect.
can download the latest solicits.
This is something else. But so like if I see it in the new, because it's the May, it's the combined May June previews, right? It's a combined thing.
Yeah.
If I see it in there again, then it's safe for me to reorder it. It's not that it's going to be, I'm going to end up with two of them because I ordered it 3 months ago or something like that, or 4 months ago.
Yeah, if they haven't canceled it, then it's still being ordered. That's why you're getting cancellations, because they've already, that means the company's already resoliciting it.
Okay.
So
I
like
mean, that's the
my
thing.
order is like the lowest it's been, God dang, for over a decade. I mean it because of all the credits. And then also what I noticed, and you might want to be aware of this just because I had to email them, but they had credited a lot of the current account with books that were canceled on the current previews, and then there were a bunch of credits showing up on the previous couple of previews. And what I had to do was I said I emailed them and said, can you apply those credits to my latest order? Because they were just standing there. They weren't
Sitting
like
there.
being applied to my credit card or anything. They were just sitting there. And sure enough, they added the extra $120 or whatever it turned out to be to my order, to my and credited it.
All right, I'm gonna have to take a look at that.
Yeah, if you see on
I,
the far if you see on the far right that you have credits, like in
yeah.
parentheses,
I mean, but I mean,
you
it's nothing like yours
screenshot,
are.
well, yeah, screenshot it and just send it to them and say, apply these all to my latest order, and then you'll get it credited.
The question, or not question, but the thing that I'm going to have to probably reach out to them about, because I did go to the my LCS this Thursday for the first time in what a couple two months, and they had like a couple comics and they had the previews there too. So I picked it up. I looked through the previews, and about 3 years ago, I ordered a Pearl Jam Art of Do the Evolution hardcover from IDW, and
Pearl
it's just
Jam, like the band?
It's because I don't know if you're familiar, but the video Todd McFarlane did the video, it's
No.
all animated. So I ordered this thing. It's all the art from that video. So I ordered it back in
Was it
2017.
McFarlane art though?
Yeah.
God damn it. I keep finding these like obscure McFarlane stuff and I like have to have it because I'm on this image fix.
Yeah.
Damn it.
But listen, so I ordered this 3 years ago. It's still showing as unshipped. I've never gotten a credit, but now when I look at the new previews, it's showing in there again. So the old one hasn't been canceled, so I think I'm going to
Where
take it
did
down.
you or where did you order it from? DCBS?
Yeah.
Yeah, then I would write them and say, can you credit mine and I'll reorder it. That's what I would do.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'm going to do then.
Yeah.
I think that's the only one that I noticed. I think everything else is just regular issues or regular comics and stuff like that, and that's part of the huge influx of cancellations.
I'm gonna have to Google some of those images though. I like
Yeah.
Pearl Jam, but I'm not like a huge Pearl Jam. I always tease Barb. I said, "Can't find a better man." I always sing that to her.
What
But
did she
she sings along.
She sings along. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. I think that that's probably the way to go.
Yeah, I'm disappointed that previews is no longer coming out for DC though. This digital crap is just full of
Yeah.
shit.
I don't think I realized that was going to be. I thought maybe it was just this one odd month or something like that. I didn't realize
No,
it was going to.
it's permanent. You have to, and it's not really like advertised. Like
No.
it's like shitty to find. Like you have to go into the search window right now and type like DC Connect. And then
Okay.
it'll take you to the download. And then you
My
can download it. It's a nice looking book. I mean, it's got preview pages. It's like previews, but maybe a little more in depth than the previews gave, because you do get some preview pages. But it's a hot mess right now. I mean, they're canceling crap left and right.
Oh my
I
God, are
mean,
they really
Manhunter, can
canceling
you believe?
everything? They're putting things in
They
digital.
canceled Manhunter.
They canceled Manhunter. Did you see? I haven't been buying it, but Lucifer, the entire last series of issues is just going to be the trade. That's
Yeah,
it.
yeah.
And then it's
Well, I
canceled.
mean, what are they gonna? I mean, it's a wonder there even is comic books being produced. I mean, what else are they gonna do?
It's
What do you mean? They can print
well,
them.
it's like it's not like they're doing this in a vacuum, like the comic book industry is in a good place right now, or something like that.
It depends. Like I know DCBS probably wants to ship more stuff than they are because they don't like these cancellations. I know my comic shop wants more orders because they can't drive fans with four books on the shelf. I mean, they
But
can't.
there's got to be a reason they're canceling stuff. I mean, it's
Well, canceling it because of low sales, they don't give a frack about it anymore.
yeah, I mean, it's a business. They gotta
Yeah, but They used to have
I
like
think
this.
I'm just surprised that it was so immediate that like as soon as we're publishing that the comics are going to come out now and we're making these changes immediately right away. I mean obviously this was an issue before the shutdown and the virus then. Because
yeah,
you know what I'm saying, and this
they're
was just
they're using it as a way to get rid of stuff easier.
Yeah, I think.
Well,
so.
I think the comic industry has been on such a tenuous thread for so long. That's all it took.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it
was
like
it's not like
gentleman's
it was a healthy
agreement.
Industry.
No, but they used to have this like handshake. Almost, not all the time, like the Great Ten, they crammed it in, they finished the story, they jammed it in. But most of the time, you get a complete story. I mean, there are exceptions. There's like Vigilante Southside or whatever the hell it was called, where
yeah.
They got the first three issues and then you had to buy the trade. Or you can go back into the 80s and look
Your
at some of those books.
There.
Sonic Disruptors, you got it. It ended in seven issues and never finished. But it's always existed. It just seems like now they're going high wire instead of it becoming like one issue like of Doc Savage, because when they were doing Doc Savage for the first wave, the final issue only went digital only. You had to go to Comixology and buy it. And I did because I wanted to finish doing that. Some of these series, they're like Manhunter. I'm upset because I love Kate Spencer. Like I adore that character.
Yeah,
the original writer. It
would have
been a
good
series, but that one's not going to even go digital, so we'll never ever see it. Which could be okay, but then there's people that have invested into a lot of the series. And they'll never ever could have it in their collection, or it'll go. In some cases, they won't finish it at all. In other cases, it's going digital, so you're gonna have that hole, and you really can't feel it. Like with the collector mentality, it sucks because you've already spent X amount in their title, and now you have to have one in your digital library. And I personally think it's bullshit. I liked when it was a gentleman's agreement and said, hey, we know we committed to five issues. We're gonna try to do it. Or I'd rather have them even like we're never gonna see Inferior Five, and that was awesome. I mean, it was awesome. We're never gonna see that. I already know it. And now I'm worried about Far Sector because I was blown away by Far Sector when Kyle picked it for DC, like, mm-hmm. as our spotlight, I was like, oh, I'm not looking too forward to
What's going on with Far Sector?
Well, I don't think it's ever going to finish. I really don't. It's not solicited anywhere.
Oh, it's not solicited. Okay. I didn't even notice that.
But
I can't believe
how timely that book is. It's about police violence. Mm. It's like this shit. I mean, we've known this has always happened, but it's like all these pandemic books and that thing, it's just, I couldn't believe how close. Like, I read Far Sector issue 3, and I was like, holy crap! Did you read that? They were gonna slaughter them.
That was the one where she had like to stand down.
First they sent her down to try to make peace between the two protesting sides, and then the government was gonna slaughter them. They were just gonna wipe them out.
Yep.
And I'm like, holy fuck. I mean, I don't know. I was blown away by it. And then they gave, it is hardcore. Like, I was like, why is this book rated 17, you know, age? It's not because it's dirty. It's not because it's because it's real. Like, even if you see it off panel, there's a scene in issue 5. Where she was a cop, and she's watching her partner beat the crap out of a black man, and
yeah.
She's just sitting there, and she didn't say, oh my God, what are you doing? Like, she was in shock, like she just like, And she had to live with that. And then she reported it, and she got kicked off the force. So it's like, holy mackerel.
I
was
agree
intense.
With you. I certainly hope that we get the rest of that.
I need to know where it ends, because it's such a volatile situation on that planet. It reminds me of Jon Stewart. This is retro. So if you go to, like, back to the, maybe it was the 80s or the early 90s, there was Green Lantern Mosaic. Oh. And that was an incredible series. It was a world where they took pockets of different worlds and they made one mosaic world. And each culture wanted to just, like, annihilate each other. And Jon Stewart was there in the middle trying to keep peace on the whole planet. I mean, it was an amazing piece, you know. And I just need to know where this ends. And I hope they at least give me the digital version. Like, yeah. at least Marvel is saying, yeah, we're cutting the cord on Star. And I can't believe they did Jane Foster. Oh, my God.
I can't believe they did Jane Foster, but I can't believe they did Star also, because I thought that they were looking to do something with her.
Well, Star... I know it's shenanigans, but it was in the top 10 book with the first issue because of all the covers.
Right.
It sold over 100,000 copies. Well, so it went from selling 100,000 copies to almost nothing, and then pretty much cancellation direct to digital.
Right.
So it's a fascinating time.
My point is just that. You're talking about like a gentleman's agreement or something like that. That's the kind of thing, like, to keep publishing a series that is not doing well is the kind of thing a healthy company can do. Mm-hmm. You know, a healthy economy, they can do in a healthy economy. Like, that's not they just can't do that. And I mean, maybe they're using it as an excuse, but knowing that the comic book industry has kind of been on like life support without a pandemic, I think that they're just doing whatever they can come up with to actually continue to have a comic book industry, you know. So it's like not a matter of like, well, why are you taking this series away and not publishing it? It's like, do that or just not have the comics at all.
I think it's a matter of time. Like, I've come to the conclusion that I think comics will always exist. I always think comics will exist. They're just not going to exist in the form that I love them. I think it's going to be the way of music. It's going to be offered digitally. And yeah, there'll be some exceptions, but it's not going to be the norm anymore.
Right. Like you said, just like the music industry, like,
yeah.
Vinyl, you can still, like, if you're into records, you can still buy vinyl. I mean, they even have vinyl at Target sometimes, but, like, you know, it's not a big selection or anything like that, and
you can't get everything on vinyl. Like, you'll be able to only get like what they know they can sell on vinyl.
I mean the only thing that I question with that is that, because it is everything that you guys are saying is it makes sense and it is valid to some extent, but I think the bigger difference is, and I'm not saying that people don't collect albums or movies, because some people do, but I think that we know that a large chunk, I mean, Mike, you just said it yourself with Star, a large chunk of sales come physically because people want to collect and they want like variant type covers, and that basically, you know, props up sales. If you go to digital only, all of that's gone. If you're a collector,
there's nothing to collect.
Nothing to collect. So that's
except the library.
And then variant cover. I mean, what does that even mean? That doesn't mean anything if it's not a physical copy anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
It's just if that was enough to sustain the industry, then it would have worked by now. You know?
No, I'm not saying that, Chris. But what I'm saying is,
no, I know you're not.
How many less sales are they going to get when it comes to the point where there's just digital? You're going to have so many people not buying anything at all.
Yeah, it'll just probably in the long run they'll work out better for them.
And you know, I mean, and we'll see where DC Universe and Marvel Unlimited, you know, how that ends up playing out years from now, if that's the case. But, you know, I mean, that's what a lot of people's solutions are right now, right? For music, for movies, and with comic books, is that you just pay a monthly subscription to enjoy, you know, everything that you want.
That's how I'm going to finish all those titles, like Star, and like I'm just going to wait for it to get there. I'm not going to pay for it.
Yeah.
You are paying for it, but I already have Marvel Unlimited in the DC app, so hopefully they'll hit there.
Right. Yeah. I don't have Marvel Unlimited anymore, so I'm going to wait until all of those issues are out instead of, you know, get them one at a time and then wait. Don't they usually drop a dollar after a certain amount of time?
Yeah.
So I'll just wait for them to drop the price by a dollar, and then I'll buy and finish off reading them. There's like three of those minis on the Marvel side that I'm buying. But that's it. So we'll see what happens in the future, I guess.
I could see them doing a thing where, like right now, they don't put them on Marvel Unlimited or DC Universe for a certain amount of time. Like I could see at some point them introducing a tier system where if you want them earlier, you can pay more.
Yeah.
Or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think the pandemic hit, the more vulnerable the business was, the more difficult it's going to be for them.
It just made what was already happening more visible. Like, everybody knows what's happening. The writing's on the wall. For one thing, people don't want to read anymore. I think the generations are turning to digital. Like, it's just, even if they are reading a book digitally, you could get on Hoopla and read a book, right? I think that's just the nature, and the way kids are taught on iPads now or whatever in digital form, that's where they want to go. I mean, that's, they're taught that. They're taught to learn that. They're not taught to, like, carry these books in their backpack. They have an iPad, and it's got 35 books and not just one or two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the way of the future. But thank God there'll always be back issues.
Exactly.
Because there's still a lot to discover.
Speaking of back issues, Mike and Chris, I have bought a few back issues.
Yes, so did I. I bought a
just wanted to mention a few things I bought. So we covered Black Magic and the DC Everything Else last time we talked. So I went back, and between my comic shop, who had a lot of them, and Metropolis, who had the rest, I bought the full 9-issue DC series. And while I was looking through my comicshop.com, I bought a handful of the a Fantastic Four, the Tom DeFalco Fantastic Force, because I was reading that Star Blast miniseries.
Yeah.
And a couple of the Fantastic Fours tied in. And as I was writing on Twitter, like, they barely tied in. Like, I owned a couple of those Fantastic Fours, and I never knew about Star Blast, so it obviously didn't take away from anything. But I really started getting it invested in the story on the Fantastic Four side. I'm like, I think I'm going to have to start completing some of my runs for this.
And you know what you're going to start seeing, though, is you're going to see Tom DeFalco, like, just his style. It's just going to... the next thing you're going to say is, I want to have all the MC2 universe.
Right.
Because he wrote the entire thing.
Yeah.
So it's like he's an addictive writer. Like he knows how to write for the comic medium because he knows what to put in 20 pages so that you want to come back for another issue.
He knows how to write it like the I mean, you know, like it was written back in the old days. Almost like an ongoing soap opera instead of a 6-issue arc.
Yeah.
And that's what I really love is that like he throws in hints of different things and then they play out as you move along. But yeah, so I picked up those and I just won an auction on about 6 or 7 older adventure comics, including the first Dream Girl and Light Lass. So I'm excited to get those. But I know you've gotten a lot more back issues than I have recently. But that's I wanted to share.
Yeah, but a lot of my back issues are stuff that nobody cares about. I mean, wow. I care about it.
But,
it's not something that's going to light somebody's fire unless they really know why I'm doing what I'm doing. But yeah, I'm going to talk about some of them today. And
cool.
I read some in my last shipment, but I got a lot of comics this past week. I got my comic shop, which was all over the place. I just go down these rabbit holes and I just, and then I read that and then I'll read something that I really like. And I'm like, why don't I have more Calibre comics? Like I see a certain quality. I'll read like an Apple comic and I'm like, why did I not know about this? Like, I didn't know that these black and whites could be so. I know why I didn't buy them initially. I literally couldn't look at a black and white comic. In my younger age, it was like, you just don't belong here. This is just weird. And now it's like, I was like, look what I missed out on all these years. They were like when indies were exploring things that you just couldn't do in mainstream comics like you do now. But I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't realize how good they were. I didn't realize that all the artists that I love and all the writers that I love, they started there. And finding, like going down the rabbit hole of these creators and just seeing like how they started and what they were doing, it's just fascinating to me. And that's why I like have to have everything Eric Larson ever did or Todd McFarlane, or I just have to experience it. But man, there's just so much out there, and all it takes is like you read something you love and then you find an ad for something and you're like, holy crap, that has a Todd McFarlane cover. and that's a Calibre comic. I never knew that existed. or you find something and you're like, oh, Sam Keith drew this, and you're like, oh my god. But yeah, it's like these rabbit holes are just incredible. That's just like Penthouse Comics, man. Yes, they're nasty. They have a little nasty, but my god, can you like the creators that are on it? If you like look at the contents of it, it's like, holy smokes! I mean, it's just a beautiful magazine. It's amazing. Yeah. So yeah.
Chris, what have you picked up lately? Anything good?
It's all digital with Chris.
Yeah. Nope, nothing. I'm out of the comic book buying game.
I know, I can't believe it.
I have my Flash. I've been doing that reading project for a long time. Well, I started years ago, and I've made like very little progress because, you know, my comic reading is is on the slower side too, but I'll read where I'm reading the post-crisis DC universe in order. Mm-hmm. And so when I get, and it's mostly rereading, but when I do Flash or Wonder Woman, I don't have all of Wonder Woman. I have all of Flash, but I don't have all of Wonder Woman. And there's some issues that are stupid expensive because of rarity that I might just read digital instead. But I read those physical. But those are probably, I haven't gotten rid of everything else yet, but those are probably the only things I'll keep is Flash and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
But yeah. But not, I have been.
You don't want to keep Teen Titans.
Oh yeah, Teen Titans too. Like not all of Teen Titans, but
just
like
the Wally stuff.
up to a certain point. You know, like not everything Wolfman. But Wolfman stayed on it for a long time, but and not just the Perez stuff, but up to a certain point, like. Eduardo Barreto, like his stuff, keeping that, like somewhere around like when it changed over to, like a little after it changed over to New Titans. Mm-hmm. And they did like the Who is Donna Troy storyline somewhere around there, a little after that. But I have the last couple weeks though been reading, because I go through. There's time periods where I just read for the show, I have been doing that project now that DC, because when I first started the project, the only way to do that was to actually acquire the issues or buy them individually.
But, right.
DC Universe, when they decided to go over to the new model, that made it. That kind of renewed my interest in the project because it made it a lot more possible to move forward past what I had collected. The last couple of weeks I've been reading in that project, which has been fun.
That's cool.
Now, did you sign up for the rewards so you could earn stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I did it after Rob told us about it. I haven't really checked on
how many points.
How many points or, I mean, it's cool that they're doing that. I can't see any, like, when I looked at the rewards, there wasn't anything that really excited me, but I'm sure they'll change over time. And there was a lot of Harley Quinn stuff, which I don't really, mm-hmm. I mean, I think she's amusing and stuff, but she's not like a character I'd want to like collect stuff of or anything, but
yeah.
But yeah, just might as well, you know, I'm already reading the comics and maybe they'll have a reward that's cool at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, why not?
Maybe they'll have a Wally West.
Yeah. On his Mobius chair.
You know what I've been playing?
I might pass on that one.
Yeah, me too. Is a Batman, a Lego Batman 3. Oh my god, this game is so like addicting. It's got all these obscure characters that you can like pick up. It's really, really cool. I've been having a lot of fun, and Zach's been playing it as well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played a little of the first one years ago, but I have heard that they really get into using a lot of obscure characters that, like, if you really know DC Comics, would be fun to see.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a lot of fun, and I just recently did get Kid Flash, and it's set in, you can tell just with the costumes and even a couple of the cutscenes that it's definitely set in New 52, like Wonder Woman and Superman are out to dinner together as a couple. But you can get the Kid Flash character, and it is Wally West. That's pretty cool. But yeah, they have so many different characters.
Well, who wants to go first? No volunteers? I'll go first then.
Everybody's jumping at the.
Yeah, I'll go first.
Chomping at the bit.
So
go first.
Yeah, one of the things that I picked up in my latest my comic shop bundle was the full run of All Out War, which were dollar comics from DC Comics, and the key character that came out of All Out War was Viking Commando, and he's basically was a Viking character that was going to kill the Huns, and he died during that process invading a castle of some sort, and the Valkyrie that was supposed to deliver him to Valhalla tried to pick him up before he was dead. And because of that, he's still alive, and he found in current time, and he actually, the Americans luckily got him instead of the Germans, but he's now a soldier in the army working for he's sort of like a one-man soldier. They send him after this Nazi camp, and he goes up to the camp single-handedly and invades this castle and takes down the Nazis. So they're luckily they found him first. And the Valkyrie is like a ghost image, and she's always there. This the barbarian's name is Valoric, and the Valkyrie's there, and she wants him to die. So it's almost like the Haunted Tank kind of thing, except in that case, the ghost is protecting the Haunted Tank. In this case, the ghost wants him to die so she can take him to Valhalla. So she's always putting him in predicaments where he can die, but he ends up surviving. And who created this guy? It was probably Kaniger. Yeah, it was Robert Kaniger. Art by George Evans. Kaniger does almost like all their war books. And the second story was called Brother with Wings. It's about what they call the Tuscany air pilots, African-American pilots that fought in the war. And the Haunted Tank is there, and they see a pilot is getting attacked by two planes, and he's actually on fire. And the tank actually takes out one of the planes to save the pilot, and the pilot realizes what's happening. And between the tank and the pilot, they take out both of the ships, but his plane is on fire, but he manages to make it back to base. And then later on, when the Haunted Tank has four panzers after it, and it looks like they're going to die, the pilot comes to their rescue. So that was a really cool story. And then my favorite story by far, because I love dogs, is Gunner Sergeant Pooch. And it's called the Four-Legged Marine. And actually, it's called the Cardboard Marine. And it was a reporter with a photographer that are coming to video some of the war, and they get assigned to Gunner and Sarge and Pooch, and they're going out on a mission to just check things out, find out where the Nazis are, and they're like they want it to be a safe mission because they don't want to get the reporter and her photographer killed. So what it turns out to be is she wants to pick one person to do this video on, like to do a commentary on this one soldier, and you think it's going to be Gunner and Sarge, but it ends up being the Pooch, because there was a sniper in the trees, and they're somewhere in Japan, and the sniper is going to take out Gunner and the reporter and Sarge, and sure enough, Pooch points him out. So they're able to shoot the sniper out of the tree. And they're like, how did you know it was there? Oh, Pooch told us it was there. And later on, he sniffs out a tank. And because he sniffed it out and started, the guy comes out of the turret with a pistol to shoot somebody. And Pooch just jumps on top of the turret and bites his hand. And then allows them to throw two grenades inside the turret and destroy the tank. And later on, the reporter and the photographer are captured, and Pooch comes to the rescue and actually saves them. So later on, they said, "Oh man, we're gonna get this article written on us, and we're gonna be all over the media." It turns out to be an article on Pooch, the fighting Marine, which is really cool. So I really dug that. And then there was a story called "To Honor the Hero." This one was not like a. This was just a military story about a football player that gets drafted during World War II, and he ends up having a sergeant that can't stand him, but his competition, his competitive nature comes into play when they're captured, and when they capture him, they have a tournament. Like they say, if you can pass through this obstacle course, I will let your sergeant live. And the guy, being a football hero, he passes the course, makes it through. And as soon as he completes the course, the Japanese guy grabs a gun and shoots him. And then he said, "Well, my promise was to keep you alive, not him." And then he ended up taking the sergeant to a concentration camp. So that was a weird story. And then the last one was called Guerrilla War, starring Force 3. And I don't remember these guys, but Force 3 was an American, a Greek, and a Polish soldier that are sent on missions. And Force 1 was a group that died. Force 2 was a group that died. And now this is Force 3. And they know if they die in their mission, then Force 4 will take over. But they had a cool mission where they were floating down on this log. This is such a cool log. They have like these fastens on it, so they're going downstream. They only have one parachute, so they like fasten it on this log. And they're all in the log, and there's planes going after them and everything, and they have like the log is hollowed out, and they have guns in there and everything. And this whole mission, it gives the backstory of all of the members of Force 3. And they end up surviving their mission. It was a really cool story. I dig the fact that they're all from different countries and they're all going out on these deadly missions. And in this case, it was a crazy mission involving a log, but it was really cool. And that was one of those dollar comics. And I own this comic back in the day. I bought it off the shelf, and I don't know. I probably traded it away, because at that time, let's see what year this was, 1979. In order for me to keep reading comics, I didn't have money. I had to trade for comics. So if I did buy something and did get allowance to buy a comic, I would end up trading it with my friends. So it was one of those comics that I had read before. I didn't remember it, but I know I had it. So that's All Out War with the Viking Commando.
Nice. I think I have issues. This issue. I think I picked it up just in the past few years at one of the local Comic Cons. They had them in the dollar bins. And I grabbed this one.
So well, that's what it cost, $1, so you got a good deal.
That was a good deal, right?
It was like going back in time. And
yeah, exactly. Well, if you'd like, I can go next.
Okay.
Okay, so I this morning read Firestorm the Nuclear Man number 1, the original one from, it was the 70s. I don't remember the exact year. I should take a look.
78, maybe?
Yeah, 78. That's right.
I actually love that issue because I know we were headed to California, and uh-huh. I bought that at a Stuckey's, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
It was the first time. It was the first time I ever saw this character. Well, it's his first appearance, but I was like, who's this cool looking character with flame coming out of his head?
Yeah, there's a lot of great things about comic shops, but there was something special about being able to get old school comics at like a gas station or something like that back in the day.
Yeah. Well, because I think part of it was the sense of discovery, because you never knew what they were going to have. And it was like a, you know, crapshoot. Like, you had no idea what titles they were going to carry or what issue numbers they had. It was a lot of.
I mean, obviously, if you're like really into comics, you want to be able to go to the shop and know that you're going to be able to get like certain issues and stuff like that. But definitely, like, just like you said, that sense of discovery and going there and not knowing if what they're going to have and stuff. There was some fun mystery to that.
And I think a lot of it is in retrospect. It's like, oh my God, that was so much fun back then. I would go, but. At the same time, I remember being that kid and be like, where is this issue of whatever? And getting frustrated that I can't find it. And I have to go to like three or four different convenience stores before I can find somebody who's carrying this title.
Yeah.
Just so you know this, I don't know, you might know it already, but there is a sixth issue of that Firestorm series.
No, I did not know that.
And the only way
not
you can get it,
database.
Well, he died in the implosion. That issue died in the implosion. So
part of
it
the
never.
Canceled
it, yeah.
Comic cavalcade.
Cavalcade. Yeah. So, but if you buy the trade, guess what? It has. It has
the
sixth issue. Yep.
Interesting. That's very interesting. Well, this one was. I mean, I read it years ago, but it was a lot of fun to reread. I know Firestorm, obviously, but. I don't remember the details of this particular story, but it starts right away with him flying through New York City and just, you know, with what he's saying, you can tell that he's just recently got his powers and they're on their way to a nuclear power plant in New Jersey. And then it starts telling the story. He gets to where he needs to go. And there's a bunch of, an organization that wants to blow up the power plant. And just when he starts to encounter them, then it goes to flashback and it kind of tells his origin story. And Ronnie Raymond is a teenager and he's going to high school. His mom's passed away and his dad has gone from city to city, but now is in New York with the newspaper. And it sounds like it's going to be a steadier job. And that they're going to be able to settle in. And so Ronnie's there in high school and he's hoping to meet some friends, to make some friends, I should say. And right away he gets off on the wrong foot with some kid who keeps giving him a hard time. And I guess this particular boy is one of the whiz kids of the class. And he's just putting Ronnie down left and right, even though he doesn't even know Ronnie at this point. Seems to befriend a girl, and he's definitely interested in her. Her name's Doreen, and he's trying to impress her in class. And this jerk of a guy, Carmichael, he's making him look stupid. He gets him in trouble. With the teacher and everything else. So Ronnie ends up wanting to try
to. Well, you know that Carmichael's a big player, right?
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember.
I think Carmichael turns into Multiplex.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it's very possible. So it cuts first before we go back to Ronnie. It cuts to a different nuclear power plant in New York, and it's about to come online, and it's being run by Professor Martin Stein, and he had to let his assistant go because he was actually stealing things from the actual plant, but he comes in with some investigators, a regulations committee. And he's lied to them saying that that Martin stole all of this assistant's work and so on, and so we're gonna have to postpone the plant from opening until we investigate these allegations. And Martin Stein's just really fed up and angry, and he's like, you know what, I'm putting this plant online tonight, one way or the other. So Ronnie's at home and he is watching TV and he sees this group that are apparently or supposedly protesting nuclear power, and they're demanding, you know, that no new power plants open. So Ronnie thinks that this is going to impress Doreen and says that he's going to join this group. And so he goes out there, and quickly the reader discovers that this group are not innocent protesters, but they're actually almost like a terrorist organization. And they're happy that Ronnie has asked to join them, because now they have somebody that they can pin everything on that has no previous ties to their group. So when they get there and it becomes apparent that they want to blow up, now they're at Professor Stein's nuclear power plant. And when it becomes apparent that they want to blow it up, Ronnie starts fighting with him and saying, no, that's, you know, you can't do that. And he gets punched and knocked out. And while they're carrying him in into the place, Professor Stein approaches them and confronts them, and they beat him up as well. And they set a timer for some explosives and leave just as Ronnie starts coming to. At the same time that this is happening, Professor Stein's former assistant, his name's Dr. Danton Black, he comes back in because he was planning on grabbing some blueprints and some layouts and so forth and making copies of them to try to improve his case that Stein actually stole from him. So he wants to have some so-called proof. And Ronnie wakes up and sees the timer going off on this explosive, and he's running to try to see if he can do something with it when it goes off. And both Ronnie and Professor Stein are bathed in radiation, as is farther down the corridor, Dr. Black. Ronnie finally comes to and realizes that he has, that not only is he not dead, but he has some sort of weird powers. And he immediately is able to understand a lot more about atomic structures and about radiation and nuclear energy than he ever could before. And he's not quite sure how, but he quickly realizes that he can change molecular combinations to like change a wall into air or what have you, from one element to another. And so he decides, since he looks like a superhero, he's going to dress the part, and he creates the costume that we're all familiar with as Firestorm. And that's what he decides to call himself. And then suddenly he realizes that somebody else is in his mind, and it's Martin Stein, who is like just a voice in his head, because Martin Stein had been unconscious when this combination happened. Ronnie is in charge of the body, and Martin is like in an advisor role. So they had heard that these terrorists were going to the nuclear facility in New Jersey next. So they're like, we've got to do something. And so that's where it picks up, where we left off at the beginning. Now, in the meantime, it does show a quick shot of Dr. Black starting to stir, with the radiation glowing off of him as well. But Firestorm has no idea that there was anyone else in the building. And so, of course, he goes to New Jersey. He quickly takes care of these terrorists and manages through a lot of different types of transformations, keeping everyone safe. The head terrorist does manage to try to set off the explosives, but Firestorm absorbs all of that into his own body and keeps everyone else alive, and knocks out the head terrorist. And towards the end there, he starts freaking out because he's like, is this how I'm going to be all the time now? Am I going to, he's basically a person that looks like his head is on fire, and he's always got this person, Martin Stein, in his head. And he starts freaking out, and just from that stress and anxiety, it makes them separate. And so then they go, he helps Martin Stein up, and they start leaning on each other as they walk down the street, and they call each other friends. And that's the end of the first issue. Like you said, Mike, it's only those five issues there, and then I didn't know about the sixth, but this was fun to read. And you know what? I didn't mention who was responsible for it, but it was the writer was Jerry Conway. He created Firestorm along with Al Milgram as the penciler.
Yeah, they're coming right off of Marvel too.
Oh yeah, that's right. 1978.
And I screwed up. Carmichael isn't Multiplex.
Is that
he's somebody
other guy?
Else?
Yeah.
He's the other guy, Denton, that you mentioned.
Yeah, because he was bathed in radiation too.
Yeah.
Carmichael
became the Thinker. I got confused because of the TV show.
Yeah.
Because Carmichael was used in the TV show, and he was the Thinker, but they had Multiplex too, so I got confused.
Mm-hmm. No worries. But yeah, that was fun. So I'm reading all these on the DC Universe app.
Do you have it? Do you own it?
I own the one that I just covered, but that's the only issue of that run that I have.
That's the important one.
Yeah, but I got to get these other ones. Issue 2 is first of Multiplex. Issue 3 is the first Killer Frost.
Yeah.
Issue 4 is the first Hyena.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean some good issues there. I've got the full run of Fury of Firestorm, but.
And then you have to get the Flash, but you already have those, I imagine.
Yeah.
Because it has the backups.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I really am probably going to have to look up these four issues and see if I can find them at a decent, because I don't want to spend a lot of money on them, to be honest with you, but it'd be nice to have them.
Yeah, but those they could be expensive.
Especially the Killer Frost one.
Yeah, Killer Frost, probably the biggest character because of the TV show too.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, they both appeared in the TV show, but Multiplex didn't last very long, whereas Killer Frost is a member of the show. Like, she's right. Part of the show. Chris?
Well, yeah.
You're up.
I have something from DC also, as alluded to. I won't go page by page because it's an annual, but it's specifically Legion of Superheroes Annual Number 3 from 87. So this is, of course, written by Paul Levitz with art by Greg LaRocque and Mike DiCarlo. It's called There's No Substitute for the Real Thing. So this is taking place after Legends, after the Cosmic Boy miniseries, after the Legion storyline where they tried to resolve the Legion's history with Superboy post-crisis. And it kind of deals with the establishment of a new Legion of Substitute Heroes, to spoil the ending. But it starts out with Cosmic Boy and Night Girl, who have been in a relationship for a while at this point. They're on C'Thun, which is Night Girl's planet. So it's pretty dark there. as her name implies, and they're just kind of hanging out, swimming, having fun, and talking. And part of their conversation is why Cosmic Boy has quit the Legion, and Night Girl is actually a member. She used to be a substitute hero became a regular member a little while back. And so Cosmic Boys, at this point, they also had the, well, the whole thing with Superboy involved a time trapper. And Cosmic Boy in the miniseries encountered a number of anomalies with their understanding of history and stuff because of the crisis. So he's got a lot of other things on his mind, and he feels like the Legion is good, in a good place. And there's plenty of superheroes to recruit from with the younger people they have coming through the academy and et cetera. And so, speaking of which, Bouncing Boy is taking a few young Legionnaires that are kind of up and coming. There's Vizalad, a new Karate Kid, and Comet Queen, and they're Bouncing Boy is leading them through a mission where they're trying to get their get used to working as a team and all that. They're surprised that the scene ends when they're surprised that their Legion flight wings, which is the first mission that they've ever actually had those, start beeping. Meanwhile, back on C'Thun, Nightgirl and Cosmic Boy have been asked to take a look at something on that planet. Even though they're on vacation, they're finding that a lot of quantities of powers are disappearing outside the grid of the planet. Because of the nature of the planet, light and heat are really important to their survival. You know, they basically have only reflected light. They suspect that it'd be someone from off planet, because from C'Thun wouldn't try to steal power from their grid. And so they're asked to look into this problem. But Cosmic Boy's not really convinced that the whole idea that it'd be somebody, like, why would somebody come all the way out to C'Thun to steal power? Wouldn't it be a lot easier just to do that somewhere else? It doesn't really make sense to him. Cosmic Boy uses his powers of magnetic fields and stuff to try to sense where the power leak is happening, and they track it down to a spot outside of the city that they're in. There's a residence that they locate. Apparently Nightgirl's father is part of a science commission on C'Thun. So she has kind of a knowledge of scientists on the planet, and as far as she knows, that there wasn't even a wasn't anything there before where this, what looks like a big lab, is located. And when they get close, they spot a Dominator, the alien race that has kind of that was involved, would be involved later in the invasion storyline, with the yellow skull like faces with the red dot on their foreheads. So when Cosmic Boy sees the Dominator, he goes to call in the Legionnaires. Unfortunately though, the call comes in just after all the main Legionnaires leave Earth for something else. Bouncing Boy and the three recruits that we saw earlier are the ones that are left behind. Their Bouncing Boy has convinced Polar Boy, who's the in charge of the Legion right now, he's convinced him to let the recruits stick around while Bouncing Boy's on monitor duty. So as we're expecting at this point, the call comes in, or the alert, there's no like audio information or anything, from Cosmic Boy, and so there's nobody else available, and Bouncing Boy briefly considers calling in the science police, but Cosmic Boy asks for Legionnaires, and they're closer to Legionnaires than science police anyway, so they head off, and there's kind of a funny page where Cosmic Boy sees a Legion cruiser coming in and gets excited, and then he sees who's actually arrived, and he says, "Oh no." But the background of this is that there is actually an attempt by the Dominators to the United Planets to come to a treaty that is kind of the Ambassador Relnick, who's been in the series before, and was under hypnotic control in the Universal Project, which is another recent storyline, like before the Superboy storyline, before it wasn't before Crisis, but it was kind of before the book had a chance to deal with the ramifications of Crisis. As a result of him being controlled by Universo, the United Planets ended up offending the Dominators, and that's why they're in this political situation. And it seems like whatever Cosmic Boy and Nightgirl have uncovered is going on in the background, or maybe a different fringe of the Dominators. A Cosmic Boy gets over his reservations. He starts to say, I forgot to mention that the Vizalad is the one that stays behind to do monitor. So it's Cosmic Queen and the new Karate Kid that come with Bouncing Boy. So there's three of them. Anyway, he says, he starts to talk about how the two recruits are really young and Bouncing Boy doesn't have the strongest power. And then he stops himself and realizes that they're all older than he and the other two founding Legionnaires were when they started the Legion. And they have way better training than they did at that time. And so he gets over some of his reservations and they start to come up a plan to figure out what's going on with what the Dominators are doing on C'Thun. So they kind of come in with all barrels, so to speak, there's several pages of a fight with them, with the Dominators, eventually. We find out that there's a fringe group of the Dominators that are planning to destroy a planet to ignite a war against the United Planets rather than have this treaty be signed. The group Cosmic Boy and all, they get shifted to another dimension and have to figure out how to get back in the start of the second part of the annual. when they eventually do, they are, of course, able to put a stop to the Dominator's plans. And it is neat to see Bouncing Boy in action as often as. Cosmic Queen and the new Karate Kid, his uniform is a little bit too strange and busy for me. I prefer the old Karate Kid character in his look. But they put an end to that, and they communicate with Duo Damsel. Apparently, Vizalad back at the monitor sent word to the academy, and that they had gone off on this mission. And she, Duo Damsel, she left, you know, because she has two cells. Basically, she left one of them at with Vizalad to give him some lessons on the mission monitor board, and the other one followed them to C'Thun with a bunch of students to help out. So in the epilogue, we see the formation of the new Legion of Substitute Heroes, which is the people that were on the mission, plus Duo Damsel, so Bouncing Boy, Karate Kid, Cosmic Queen, Night Girl, Cosmic Boy and Duo Damsel, start up the new Legion of Substitute Heroes. So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, Duo Damsel and Cosmic Boy especially, and Cosmic Boy a founder, and then Duo Damsel pretty early Legionnaire, sort of a being on the Legion of Substitute Heroes. It's a resolution to Cosmic Boy's dilemma at the beginning of the issue, where you know, it's a different, whereas the original Substitute Heroes, it was something that they did in secret, and they would, if they did help out the Legionnaire, they would do it without the Legionnaire knowing. This is a different thing where there's no secrecy. They don't have any regular meetings or even a headquarters. They're just a backup. They saw in this mission that they could stand in for the Legion if they needed to, and they can do it again if they are needed. So it kind of gives Cosmic Boy a way of still being involved if he's needed, but he can have the time to pursue the things that he wants to look into and stuff. And so yeah, I mean, it was kind of neat, just to see how they're going to kind of redefine that concept in this new period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of these days, that's on my list too, is to read all the Legion. Specifically this particular, starting with this particular run and going forward. I've read a lot of it, but I had been missing a lot of it, and now I own them all, so it's just a matter of me having the time to pursue such a large chunk of comic book reading.
Kid's costume looks terrible.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, Cosmic Queen, she's pretty cool, but it's not very, like, it doesn't really grab you, and it doesn't really fit with the normal.
Bouncing Boy ends up with Duo Damsel, right? I mean, they're a thing, right?
Yeah, they are at this point, yeah, because I mean, there's only
indication. They actually get married at some point, I think.
Yeah, she uses some kind of like term of endearment when she first contacts them or something. That's the only real connection, or not only real indication, but yeah, Rob, like you were saying, I have these, like, I've read a bunch of the very early issues of Legion. Like, I think I read most of the first Legion showcase. And then I read a bunch, like, before Levitt's run or leading into his run or something. And then I've read these post-crisis issues. And then and then I read the first Legion I ever read was the reboot stuff. So I have these, I've sampled bits from different periods, but there's these huge gaps in between that.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to fill in at some point, but
I know it's just, there's so much. There's just, I mean, this is, you know, this volume 60 something issues, but then it goes on from there with, you know, other volumes that I think the next volume ran for, I want to say it ran for 100 issues. Maybe I'm wrong.
Then that was when the spinoffs came into, like Legionnaires and
right, yeah,
the Legion Hyphenated, which is kind of more disconnected, but
yeah. Yeah, so the next one ran for 125 issues and annuals and everything else. But to your point, it was the exact same time when it was almost like a bi-weekly series with Legionnaires. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to read, but I have them all now after having a lot of holes in the collection. And it's just a matter of when do I want to actually start pursuing this. You know,
sounds like you could do it soon. You don't have a lot to read. You could jump on it.
I know, but
did you read the Creeps yet?
I read one of, because I bought two of the issues. I read one a little bit. I read a couple stories on Friday night before bed, and then I read the rest yesterday.
That did you like it?
Oh yeah, it's like the old school horror comics. It's awesome.
Yeah, I don't have all the Legion stuff. I have all of Legion of Superheroes Volume 1, which is the reprints. That's from 1973.
Okay. Yep, just a few issues, right? Last year or something?
Four. Yeah, I have all that. I'm missing, I don't know, it looks like about a dozen from Volume 2 that took off from Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. And then I have all of Volume 3, which Chris just covered. Yeah. Which is the Baxter run.
That was a big deal when I was getting into comics, because I was buying the previous run from the Superboy when it became Tales of the Legion on the news. And then when I saw, and then I heard, oh, they have a new series, but it's only at the comic shop. And I ran out, and I think, I don't even know. I couldn't even guess, but the first issues I got were like more like 8 or 9 or something around there, and I went back and managed to get a handful of other ones, but I had been missing like issue 1 for years and years and years before I finally went back and picked it up.
Yeah,
hot back in the day. This and the Teen Titans Baxter run.
Yeah.
So I have close to everything. I still need some pockets of Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes and Legion of Superheroes, that volume.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I need some Legionnaires. Like, the Legionnaires were my X-Men, man. For some reason back then, I just couldn't get into them. I just, now I'm more into them than I was, just like I am into the X-Men. I guess when I was younger, I hated these big groups. I just found them overwhelming.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's funny because like those are the ones that you didn't gravitate to, but those
your
were
favorite.
Those were my favorite. X-Men and in the Legion. It was just fascinating.
No, my groups were the oddball groups, the groups that shouldn't be teams. that's what I navigated to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, I'm going to lightning round this because I have a couple things I want to talk about.
Sure.
I picked up one of Mike Diodato's early works, and this is a reprint from his Brazilian comic and then translated called Prime Cuts. And he actually did one story where his father wrote it. Mike Diodato Sr. Wrote it, and he drew it. And Man, he is one of those artists. Like, my first knowledge of him was Wonder Woman, when he was doing Wonder Woman. And then he moved over to Thor, and I followed him over there. And his work in that time frame was very different than what it is now. Now, I liked it more in that time frame because it seemed more like a natural pencil, a natural line. And now it seems like there's some kind of digital interference that's happening with his work. Although it's really fantastic, I still enjoy his work quite a bit. But it's usually darker, and it has some digital mechanic to it that I can't really explain. Wow, somebody's racing. So the first story was a vampire story. It's called Jack. And what it actually turns into, it's the story of Jack the Ripper in a vampire story. It's really cool. It's like this guy Jack loved his wife so much, and one day she was attacked by a vampire, so he ended up having to feed her. So he became Jack the Ripper and started killing women and bringing her the blood. So that was the story of that. And the second story was a werewolf story. This was really cool. It was about a kid that was born, and it's sort of the doctor wondering why this kid has issues every full moon. And he kind of follows him into the 20s, but he doesn't really know what's going on. And he starts reading history books, and he's like, wow, I think he's a werewolf. And in his 20s, his parents like just want to be naive about it, so they don't want to know, and they want him to be natural. They let him go on a date with the girl, actually his fiance, and he slaughters her in the car. He doesn't remember what actually happens. And then there's this detective Terror who reads a lot of comics that believes that he's a werewolf, and he ends up taking down the werewolf. But it was a cool werewolf story, and the art is amazing. And then there's Dijins, which is a story kind of like taking place in sort of, I think, more of an Afghanistan type story or somewhere in the Middle East. And it's about this girl that is seeking revenge, and she takes a vehicle and ends up blowing up this militaristic base and sacrificing herself. But man, his art in black and white, and this is like magazine style. Its cover price is $2.95. It is from 1996, published by Caliber. And wow, I was pretty amazed. And I know that I'm going to be ordering some more Caliber for sure, based on this. And a lot of
That's
it
cool.
is reprints from Mike Diodato's original Brazilian work. And then I read Venture 1 through 3. So I went down two rabbit holes. One is Caliber, and I found out a lot of stuff that I liked in there. And then I went down an AC rabbit hole, and I haven't read a lot of AC. You said you read Venture, right?
I own number one. I mean, I literally must have bought it like couple of years after it came out. It was just like in a random like box, or you know what I mean? But like I knew
Yeah.
nothing about it, and I haven't read it since.
Well, for me, I learned about this. I went on this Eric Larson buying streak where I was buying everything that I could afford, other than like, I think there's like three books that I don't own now. Two of
And
them
this
that.
venture is not expensive, is it?
There, which one?
The venture, that's not expensive, right?
No, that one's not expensive. This is more. The stuff that's expensive is the very first thing he put out with Savage Dragon was like his own publication, and there's like only like a dozen in existence, and it's like too expensive.
Gotcha.
And then I've been trying to find another book called Prism, which is one of his early works, and I don't know what that runs outside of CGC grade, but in CGC grade it goes for like 1,000,
Jeez.
So I don't think I'll ever be getting that unless I can find it somewhere odd. And then there's this venture I learned from Bill that it had Eric Larson. He only does the first two issues. He draws them, and it you could definitely see his style is in there, especially when he draws the female. And this is a Bolt. This character is so cool, especially if you love Wildfire from the Legion of Superheroes, because Bolt is sort of like the Wildfire equivalent. He's an astronaut. He goes into space, and there's these aliens called the it sounds nasty. I forget they're called the Cumula cloud beings, and he goes into this cloud, and he it there's a rebel cloud that becomes more and more powerful as it absorbs creatures. It just sucks them in and absorbs them and steals their energy. And this astronaut is one of them. And but he sort of splits in two. So like 20% of him goes into this being called the Comet and has this suit that's keeping the energy in it. And he doesn't always remember who he is, but he's slowly gathering his memory. His name is Mitch Cameron, and he runs into this character called Fate, and Fate on the moon tells him, here's kind of what's going on. You need to reunite with your body or you're going to dissipate. So it's like the suit that's keeping himself keeping him in a certain form. And then on Earth he has a wife and a daughter, which you never really get to know outside of issue one. And then there so Fate gives him like this magnetic crystal, and this character called Blaze and Mentor are after the crystal, and they actually steal the crystal in issue three, and he becomes powerful. He never reunites with his body. You never know what happens. And then it's one of those series that dies. There's no evidence of it ever finishing.
Yeah.
And I've done some research, and Vince B, even on 11 o'clock comics, said I think it's over. He sent me some articles on it, and there's two issues that are a prequel to this, but I don't think the story ever finishes, unfortunately. So we'll never know what happens to this character, and it's a cool character. And then the other story that ran in this was the Explorers Limited. And they were kind of like the Fantastic Four that had powers. One was a teleporter. One was a light being, a cheerleader in high school. She's a pain in the ass. One of them is Mike Nesmith, if you're a Monkees fan. But he's not a monkey in this one. The other one is Fiona Page is the teleporter. Kevin Modell is the commander. He's the only one that has like a code name. And he's immortal, and he kind of like loses his mind until an alien race gives him a helmet that kind of contain his emotions and stuff. And then Stacey Williams is the cheerleader. But that is a cool story, and I need to seek that out. And then it had a Femme Force origin story that was told from the perspective of them reading their origin through a comic book, and it was pretty awesome. But it got me to go down an AC rabbit hole for sure. I ordered some Femme Force. They have a jungle girl too called Tara, who basically is a jungle hero in Femme Force, which I love my jungle girls. And she eventually becomes this character called, I forget what her name, but she's sort of like Giganta in the DC universe, and I want to seek that out. But this was all kinds of fun, and there's ads for all kinds of goodness in AC Comics. And I learned a little bit about, I mean, we all know in the 90s that kind of imploded. We know in the 70s there was the DC implosion. I also learned that the industry was starting to hurt in 1983, and I didn't know anything about that. But it affected this character, Bolt, for sure, because there was the print run of the initial Bolt wasn't big because of the downsizing of comics at that time, and it had like a really low distribution, but he had like a cult following, so that's why he eventually ended up in this Venture comic. But it's really cool to read about the history of how all this stuff works. That's it.
That's cool. All right, I got another one here. Let me pull it back up. I read Majestic number one. Have you ever read this, either one of you?
Is that the Image character?
Yes, but it's a DC comic, Abnett and Lanning.
Yeah, I've
It's a
read it.
four-issue miniseries.
I've seen it, but I don't think I ever read it.
Yeah. It was all right. So it starts with Majestic coming into a diner. He literally clears the place out, like everyone goes rushing out, and he asks for some food, and Superman comes in and sits down next to him, and they start chatting because basically Superman's point is that Majestic is being a little too rough with what's going on. He's been doing some good, and Superman thanks him for doing different things that he had been doing. But then he asks about how many people Majestic has locked up in stasis in Greenland, and he's got 131 criminal metahumans locked up there. And Superman says, "Well, they haven't had a trial. We have laws, et cetera, et cetera." And he's like, "People are getting a little nervous because you're just taking responsibility for all this on your own." And he makes it a point to say that he's never emptied a diner in his life when he walked in, but people are afraid of Majestic, and nations are afraid. And basically telling him that he needs some human perspective, that he needs that, he's Majestic all the time, and Superman makes sure to take time as an actual trying to live like an actual person. And Majestic says, "Okay, well, that's interesting, but I've got to be going." And he flies off, and then it cuts to a wider camera angle, and Superman says, "Stand down, we're cool. We just need to give him a little space." And you see, because it's like a bird's eye view, the entire diner is surrounded by sharpshooters. There's all these police cars. There's a police helicopter flying overhead, and so they were prepared for the worst. And then, as Superman walking by, he's got the rest of the Justice League is also out there, and he says to Kyle Rayner, he's like, "Oh, Lantern, he said you could have this back," and he hands him back his Green Lantern ring. So Majestic apparently even grabbed the ring from Kyle Rayner's hand. Majestic's has decided that because he does come from another world, another dimension. And he's been building a satellite out in outer space to try to get him back, and so he goes back up to try to finish that up so maybe he can get back home. This Earth really isn't the place for him. So he's working on this when Eradicator comes out of nowhere, and they start a huge fight, and he manages to kind of restrain Eradicator when he ends up triggering an auto destruct, and huge enormous explosion blows up the satellite he's been working on, and he ends up flying off to another world that apparently he had been looking at before, and it has had Daemonites on it in the past. But he hadn't done anything with it, and it has this. It goes inside this research facility, and it has this large glowing, like half orb, and he's just looking through. And when he's not paying attention, something's coming out of there, grabs him, drags him along and throws him back into this like almost like a glowing orb gate. And then the last page is just showing like a regular house outside of Metropolis, and the doorbell rings, and this woman answers the door, and it's just a handyman saying, it looks, he's dressed as a handyman anyhow, and he says what his name is, that he's here for a room to rent. And you obviously can tell that this is Majestic, so something has happened where it's thrown him into a kind of a everyday type man's situation. And that's the end of the issue. So it was interesting. It really didn't, I don't know a lot about this character, and maybe that's part of it, but it really didn't draw me in to read the rest of the other three issues by any means. Maybe if I knew more about the character, I'd be a little bit more invested, but
He's the Superman of the Wildstorm
Wildstorm.
universe.
Yeah, I kind of got that, but yeah, with I think if I have a little bit more, and I think he did appear in some Action Comics or Superman comics for a
Yeah,
while.
he was Wildcats. That's where he started.
Oh, okay.
And then from Wildcats, I guess this series, and what makes this interesting is that it didn't have the Wildstorm go on. It has DC in
Let's
it.
see, yeah. So that was made it interesting. I mean, it was interesting to read, but I wouldn't be, there's so many other things to read. I wouldn't be rushing in to read the rest of this.
It's kind of funny, some of these Image properties, well, that started out as Image, that like with Wildstorm is a good example of it, but like a lot of Liefeld creations and stuff that when they end up crossing over or just being flat out bought, incorporated into another universe, and they were created as kind of analogs or slightly
Worthless
similar to
other universes.
a
Yeah.
DC or Marvel, and then they get incorporated, and then they don't have enough to distinguish them that to make it interesting enough to like have this other character around in the universe, and they kind of get neglected.
Yeah. Except for
You know, they're not
Supreme.
one-to-one copies,
Supreme hit
but
it. Supreme hit it big, and that's Liefeld Superman, because Alan Moore took over. And if you read that, it's like, what if Alan Moore continued off from that action, that the last issue of Action Comics, before Crisis, and started writing Superman, and that's Supreme. I mean, it's just
Supreme's never been brought into DC or Marvel, right?
no.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that that was it's popular. In other words, the Alan Moore Supreme series was pretty doggone successful.
That's another run that I have to read. Remember,
Yeah.
I
Yeah,
bought the whole
it's
lot on eBay.
those were some hard to track down, because I have every single Supreme issue except two Alan Moores. I'm still trying to track down.
I got lucky with that lot because it
Yeah.
was worth it to me, because I think I'd already owned issue one, and so it was like, okay, well, I might as well pick it
He
up.
takes it into the Silver Age, though. It's like you got, the Lady Supreme, and you have the Animal Supremes and all kinds of different stuff. So
That's
if you like
interesting.
that kind of stuff, it's like pre-Crisis Superman.
Maybe that's what I'll.
Diana Ross.
Yes, Diana Ross, of course. Maybe that's what I'll read. The next run, that big run that I read, is Supreme. Is it, what is that, like 50 issues plus some side issues? More
It's
than
a
that.
lot,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's like 60 something issues. 68 in an annual, and then they had some of those. But the lot that I bought had all those other, like Lady Supreme and all of those issues
Yeah.
as well, so which was nice.
It's not as good as the Alan Moore stuff.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's kind of like Liefeld created Deadpool is kind of just a analog of of Deathstroke, and then other creators came along and made him the Deadpool that people think of today.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did that with Blood Wolf. Blood Wolf is Lobo. I mean, you can take all of his lineup and map it. Shaft is Hawkeye, you know.
Yeah, he hasn't really created any original characters. All right, so the other thing I read was from the same time, around the same time, and this is Infinity Inc. number 43. Mm-hmm. So by Roy and Dan Thomas, of course, with Vince Argandese as penciler. And this is called, just called I, exclamation point, EYE. This is so a sort of a long string B plot being brought to the forefront and kind of shit starting to hit the fan, with the Silver Scarab storyline. But what's interesting starting out is that Jade is not around because she's she has like her ongoing thing with her was that she wants to also be a movie star, and so her brother Todd Obsidian, he's explaining the brainwave that she has finally got a possible break. She's going to be in this B movie, and so that she contacted somebody to fill in for her, and who shows up but Our Man, or not the old Our Man, of course, but the new one, Rick Tyler, and he's got there's so the thing with Our Man was that there was he was having bad side effects of the Miraclo pill, and that his father and Charles McKnighter, the original Dr. Midnight, came up with a new system for him, and he's got this skin patch that he puts on the back of his neck, and so also probably like now that it's the late 80s, trying to do away with the character that pops pills for his superpowers.
Maybe.
Which is kind of funny because Wildcat, this is the female Wildcat, she says, so pass some of those power pills around, amigo. I could do with some strength of 10 stuff myself. And so it also kind of like the Thomases write their way around that too, where he's like, yeah, sorry. Cause like, why wouldn't you just pass them out to everybody else? And he says that, they're, specifically designed for him, these patches that he uses now.
Yeah.
Like I said, Lyta, or Fury, she for a while now, she's been trying to figure out, like, she had the relationship. Is it Hank Hall? Right? Hank?
Yeah, he's the Scarab.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. There's several halls, and you know he's Infinity Inc. gets a little complicated sometimes.
He's got the Hawkman thing going.
history. Like, Infinity Inc. is a little complicated with the character, the lineages, and the character relationships, and the first names, and yeah, he goes by Heck also. They get a postcard from Egypt from, and it's and Yolanda's looking at it. Yolanda Wildcat, she it's postmarked Egypt, and it's in Lyta's handwriting. It says, "Heck and I here in Cairo, first stop on our round the world honeymoon." And they're kind of like, Nuklot's like, "Well, that's surprising. Like, they patched things up pretty fast considering the way that Heck walked out on her." And Obsidian's looking at it kind of like, this is kind of weird, I guess, if she wants to take him back. And all of a sudden, off panel, there's this flash of fire, and the postcard goes up in flames, and someone yells, "It's a lie!" And it's Northwind, who has been out of the book for quite a few issues at this point, and he, like, to the point that he's like, "Why is Mr. Bones just sitting here at the table with you guys? Shouldn't he be in prison?" Which they tell him, it's a long story. He's like, "Well, I'll hear it later then, because we've got to get everybody together. Where's the rest of the team, and where's Jade, et cetera?" What's all this about? And he tells them, "You got to contact the rest of the team, because some of them had gone away prior to this." And they're like, okay, like, we get it, it's serious, we'll go up." And so Nuklon tries, while Nuklon's trying to connect them, he starts to fill them up, and tells them the Silver Scarab has finally fulfilled his destiny. That, like, Northwind's people, they knew that there was some kind of, they had known by different means that something like this would eventually happen, and that it's a real serious. And they're not really at first. Like, Todd says, "What are they smoking up there?" And Mr. Bones says, "It's not nicotine, and that's for sure. Heck, Hall couldn't threaten a pile of manure." Sure, manure. I don't. Yeah, I guess that. Sure, if you got to say it right, because he's always doing. He speaks in rhymes, you know. So they can't get through to the rest of the team. This is like, well, what about Lyta then? If she went to talk to him, and we got that postcard, and she says she's pregnant with Hex baby. And Northwind is not happy to hear this. He says that she and her unborn child might already be dead. And then again, they're like, "Well, you're going as far as to say that Hex a murderer," and they're not really convinced. But they take off to go, and that they're gonna get they're convinced enough that they're gonna go get Jade, and we see that she's the movie she's in doesn't seem to be very high budget. She's just playing one of three, like, slave girls chained together, and this barbarian like dude is trying to save them from this dragon like monster that comes in, and the guy that's playing the barbarian trips on trips on something on the ground and falls and stabs the monster in the side with his sword, and it deflates. So the director yells cut, and the Jen and the other two actresses are cracking up, and but then and they're just sort of like starting to say to her, like, "You look really familiar to me. I know I've seen you somewhere." And she's just kind of like, she doesn't have her green skin or anything like that. She's just like, I don't know what you're talking about, but and then Northwind and her brother in his shadow form come flying in, and they're like, "Hey, I know who you are," and she's like, "Yeah, yeah," and she reveals her green skin and breaks out of the manacles that they have her in and costumes up and goes off with them. So, kind of a amusing sequence and. as they fly off, the other actresses are like, "Well, that's she just ruined her career." But the director seems to be like, "Oh, that actually looks pretty interesting." So they fill in her in, and then as they're flying, we get like a flashback where Northwind fills them all in on the background of, the Egyptian curse and all of that, that they end up kind of later tying into the Hawks and stuff, which there was some history there with like Hathset already and Prince Khufu. So it already is pretty tied in when Princess Shiera. With the connection of the reincarnations is Hawkman and Hawkgirl, and Hawkman and the All-Star Squadron defeating Anton Haster, who was the reincarnation of Hathset. With Roy Thomas, it's always really super connected to the comic history and stuff. Carter and Shiera Hall couldn't evade their destiny, to which to have a child, they would be born without a soul. And even though Northwind knew this prophecy, he refused to believe it. But when Hector left Lyta, and which this is something we saw in a previous issue, that he went to the manor and found Hector Hall with a woman who was a reincarnation of Hathset. So that's when he retreated to his home world and got set up to go get the rest of the team. So we then see Lyta waking up in what looks like a Egyptian temple kind of place. There's green incense burning and statues around her and stuff, and she's trying to get her bearings and stuff, but then she hears someone coming, so she pretends to be asleep. And that's when the Silver Scarab approaches. It is a pretty kind of a cool, even though it's a scarab, kind of a cool design, because it makes him seem very alien. At this point, Hector Hall's not even really in control. So thinking that he's asleep, he goes to touch her neck, and she grabs it and basically body tosses him into the wall. And then like grabs the huge column that started to break because he collided with it, and throws it at him. Actually, she throws it at the door to block anyone else coming in, and so it's just the two of them one-on-one. But she's a little surprised at how formidable he is, and she just keeps accusing him of being the murderer of Heck Hall. It's revealed in an issue that Hastor that the reincarnation is actually in the form of a woman that has the rest of the Infinitors, Skyman, Dr. Midnight, Brainwave, Our Man, the mission that they are supposedly on. She's the one that's leading them and doesn't realize, like, this is that the woman that Northwind saw and doesn't realize that they don't realize that. So she's using them to uncover this sarcophagus. Dr. Midnight goes under there and following her instructions, and this huge, like, almost electronic looking eye comes out of the sarcophagus and starts to attack. And that's when she reveals her ruse. Most of the team gets taken out. Dr. Midnight is the last one that's arrived. And she, as Hastor takes off with the eye, with the power of the sun that they helped her on Earth. And Dr. Midnight is the only one that's like conscious, is to like yell her threats after her that they're, you know, gonna do what they can to stop her. But yeah, I mean, this story's been building up for a while, and so it's kind of neat to see it to come to fruition. And honestly, it's it brings a little bit of a life back to the book, which kind of had been, I don't know, prior issues, but kind of a little bit slow in my opinion. But I think that this is a strong storyline with some nice ties to history, so it's cool to see them get back to it. And honestly, like, for a while McFarlane was on the book, and I don't think that was to the book's strength. I'm not really a fan of his earlier DC work. So I'm actually kind of glad to see somebody else on the book.
I gotta get the time tag on that so I can edit it out.
Really? I mean, his early.
Yeah,
his
I gotta edit that out. Beep, beep, beep.
Yeah, I think all of his like, weaknesses as an artist are like on display in his earlier work. I think he found his strengths and like and worked to them and kind of made his work, his art, more appealing. But like his early DC stuff, and like I feel the same way about Year Two, like his Batman story. There's a few panels where it's kind of like his Batman looks kind of cool, but overall, like, really, until he moved to Marvel and on Spider-Man and stuff, I don't really care for his early work. Especially,
oh, man,
like,
I don't
think
the evolution of an artist.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I'm not saying it's uninteresting to see that development, but as far as just the experience of just reading the book and his, I don't find the art that appealing aesthetically. And I don't think he was a real good fit for Infinity Inc. either. Which, given its ties, I think it benefits from a more like classic style artist. Mm-hmm. With the whole All-Star Squadron connection stuff. Well, that's it for me.
All right. I wanted to ask you, what, just out of curiosity, like, so Infinity Inc. 43, what made you decide to read number 43?
Because I've been reading it.
Okay.
From, well, it's like, I've read a bunch of the early issues of Infinity Inc., and then there's a little bit of a gap, and then I picked it back up with the whole post-crisis reading project, so.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure where that started, but that's that's where I started reading it again, and that's, yeah, so I've been reading up to this point. That's just where I've reached in with that title.
Yeah. I'm always curious how people pick, but that makes sense because you've been moving out right along. I didn't know if you just randomly picked an issue or something.
Right, yeah.
Well,
no.
No, he's playing around with the crisis. All right. Well, you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com.
I'm not done.
Oh, okay.
You don't have one?
Like, no, you don't I'm just have sitting here one? Eating a cookie.
Oh. Let me tell you what I've got then, if that's okay. We got a few minutes, yeah. Right?
What do you got?
All right. So, the last one that I read to complete my trifecta of DC number one issues is, see, now I'm unprepared because I thought you were going next.
What? No, I did two.
Huh?
Oh, I did two books.
Gotcha.
Well, I kind of combined Venture and Prime Cut, so.
Yeah, that's okay. Of course, it's impossible to find this now. Is Manhunter number one, and if I can only find, I don't know how to go back on this thing. To see about this book, can I do that? No.
On DC Universe, or?
Yeah. I want to get the series back up, but I can't find the series.
If from your home screen.
Yep.
If instead of clicking on the image of the cover, click on the name of the
Got it.
And then I think that usually brings you to
it's
kind of unintuitive.
You're a wonderful human being. Thank you very much, Chris. Okay, so this
that's all it takes, hey.
Well, no, you did great. Manhunter number one by Ostrander and Yale from 1988. Never read this one before. But, I love the Kate Spencer run, and I wanted to go back and read this one. So this opens up with Mark Shaw. He had been the Manhunter, and as it says, he was a hero, he's a villain, now he's a hero again, and now he's a bounty hunter. So what he's doing now is he's tracking down he's surveilling the Penguin, who has stolen some jewelry from, I don't know if it's a museum or if it was a jewelry store, but it's called the Rocks, R-O-C, the Rocks Eggs. And so he waits, he's watching the Penguin kind of go down the street. He waits for him to enter a certain a building, and then he sees a light turn on in one particular room in the building, and he smashes his way in and he catches the Penguin in his bubble bath. And so he says, "Are you going to come quietly?" And the Penguin's pretty upset. He's sitting there in his bathtub with his monocle and cigarette holder, and he's like, "Well, this is how I like it, when avoiding problems and catching somebody with their pants down." So Penguin asks for at least something to wear, and of course Manhunter hands him his top hat. So he brings Penguin into the local police precinct where he's booked, and then that's the end of that little prelude, which was kind of cool. We then cut to a priest who's going into a cathedral for a confession to his mentor, and he's got two bodyguards for some reason too, both with guns, and he goes in and he greets his old mentor. And he says, "You know, I'm ready for you to hear my confession." And the mentor pulls out a gun, shoots him right between the eyes, which, of course, brings his two bodyguards that were waiting outside the cathedral. And this person that killed him was hiding behind some pillars. As they discover the priest's dead body, The assassin jumps in a car and drives away. And in the meantime, also has slashed the bodyguard's tires. So they're stuck. The guy driving away calls in that the hit was successful on his radio, and it turns out that this is Dumas. So I just know a little bit about some of this stuff from the Kate Spencer, so I just feel like this is interesting to read at the time. And so we cut back to Mark Shaw. He's putting on a limousine driver's disguise, complete with mustache, and he goes to an event at a private home. He walks in as everyone is leaving, and turns out that he's visiting his own family undercover as a limousine driver for some reason. So his family seems to have a very loving family, and they're hugging him and talking and stuff. And he starts taking off his disguise. His little brother's pretty pissed off that that Mark Shaw is doing this bounty hunter thing, and they have an argument. But then Mark Shaw, as we often have in these types of issues, especially at the time, goes into a detailed flashback scene of what Mark Shaw had been up to in the past, and how he had taken the mask of the Manhunter as part of a Manhunter cult. And little did he know at the time that they were actually aliens for that whole, what was that crossover called, where they were all robots? I don't remember what the crossover was.
Millennium?
Yeah, Millennium, yeah. So it refers also to his first appearance in First Issue Special. And then it talks about how he then he was a public defender, and he ended up then later he ended up infiltrating the Justice League. He wore two disguises at the same time. He was the privateer as a hero and a villain as the Star Sar. And then eventually he had to do, he eventually ended up being arrested and tossed in jail. And he ended up having to work with the Suicide Squad. Are you okay there, sir?
Sorry, I thought I was on mute.
That's okay. Well, <extremely dying. laughs> and so now he's served his time, and now he's done with the Suicide Squad, and now he's going to be do bounty hunting. His all of his family seem to approve of this, except for his younger brother, His mom even says that he's not worried about the ethics of the profession so much as the safety, and that he wants to make sure that he's okay because he deals with such violent people. And he said, well, as a bounty hunter, he's like, I'm actually not a superhero. I'm a businessman. I'm a bounty hunter. It's like I'm basically keep a low profile until it's to my advantage to strike, and then that's much like what we saw with the Penguin. So apparently he's a Mets fan. This takes place in New York, and he's at the Mets Cubs game. And he happens after the game's over, he's about to go home, and he was actually there for two reasons. He was watching the game, and he was also keeping his eye on Captain Cold, who is a big Cubs fan. And Captain Cold, from what he has learned, is likes gambling, and he bets on the Cubs, and he bets them to win all the time. And so it constantly puts him in the hole, because if you remember, the Cubs were always a very, very poor team. So then he usually has to do something illegal to raise money, because he's always in debt. So he's just keeping his eye on him. Apparently that's going to be the next bounty he's going to be after.
So after the game, he starts walking off, and Mark Shaw walks off, that is. And he's like, damn, he's like, oh, I don't even have a chance to stop at the bar for a beer, because up on the rooftop is Captain Cold in uniform. And he's like, he's doing something tonight. So he changes into his Manhunter uniform, and he goes to track down Captain Cold. Now Captain Cold is about to break up a drug exchange that's going on. He's going to grab the money, and he's not the only one. Apparently, the media had gotten information that a major drug deal was going down too, and the drug dealers were totally caught off guard by suddenly a camera and a man with a microphone saying that they're busted. And then all of a sudden Captain Cold comes out of nowhere saying that, you know, hand over the cash. And so there's all these people all involved, and Manhunter comes out and attacks Captain Cold first and says that he's under arrest. And Captain Cold tries to shoot him with his freeze gun, but his power baton actually manages to deflect the blast and make the gun explode, knocking out Captain Cold, at which point the police come out of nowhere because they were right behind the media. And the reporter starts trying to interview Manhunter's asking him if he's Paul Kirk. Is he related to Paul Kirk? Is he Paul Kirk's son? He keeps saying no, 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 and he's getting really pissed off. And then he sees the police taking Captain Cold away, and he's like, yeah, he's my bust. So apparently he's not going to get a bounty on him. And the last page is it cuts to this woman who's watching this report about the new Manhunter, and she says, I want to hire Dumas because I need a mask to for it to complete my collection. And it shows that she has this crazy collection of masks, so I'm not quite sure where she gets these, but I see Dr. Midnight, Mr. Miracle, Vigilante, I see Animal Man, I see Batman, and then the other Manhunter masks with just one blank one missing. But, you know, how she gets these masks, I don't know. That's the end of the issue. It promises Dumas versus Manhunter next. And I will say this was very entertaining. Another Now series that I've never read that I probably need to go back to at some point and read, because I thought this was very, very engaging. Mike, I assume you've probably read a lot of this.
I own all of it.
But have you read it?
Yeah, I've read every single Manhunter.
It's really
the only one that's weird is the next volume.
Which one is that one?
That one is Stephen Grant and Vince Giorano.
Oh, okay.
That's the Chase Lawler.
Oh, okay. It's the Manhunter. Zero Hour.
Yeah.
Because I have the Zero issue, but that's the only one that only lasted 12 issues, huh?
Yeah, that one is not. I don't know. Maybe I have to revisit it at some point, but I don't remember liking this one too much.
I would probably read them through on the app.
Artistically, it's pretty nice. Like it's pretty nice artistically. It's just I've never been. I'm kind of like a 50-50 guy on Stephen Grant's writing. Because I think he wrote Fate, too. Like when Fate had the emblem around his eye and carried the knife.
Like a punk guy.
Oh, no, that was John Francis Moore.
No, but you're right. Stephen Grant came on later.
Five.
He didn't do the whole thing, but he did a handful of issues. Yeah, I've only read a handful of those as well. I wasn't hot on that, to be honest with you. The Fate.
Yeah.
That was okay. But yeah, so that's all I got today.
All right, Chris, do you have anything else?
Nope.
Chris,
all right, we can wrap this up now. Now I can end it for real.
Yeah.
All right. I already mentioned the website. On Facebook, it's the same thing, except it's Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button. You can reach Chris at MythMakingETC. You can reach Rob at Rob Krieger and me at Mike Myers Brunch. And I think that's it. Sounds you guys good. Have a good remaining Sunday.
Happy Sunday. And, hope you guys have a great week going forward. Western New York is poised to start phase two of the reopening on Tuesday. So we'll see if that happens. That would be being able to get into retail stores again, but not malls. You could go into a mall where it has a store has an outdoor exit, but so no malls, but you'd be able to start shopping in actual regular stores again if all goes well.
Yeah.
Well, they can call it whatever phase they want. I'm not going to be in any rush to go anywhere.
You're not going
to. Yesterday we went to go pick up a barbecue in a restaurant, and I was impressed how they separated tables. Like this place, it really went out of its way to have more than 6 feet between each table.
Can you sit and eat there?
Yeah.
Yeah. New York. That's
we didn't eat there. We just got it to go.
Yeah. But no, I gotcha. But
in hindsight, it probably would have been better to eat there because then we could have got infinite number of barbecue sauce and we could have, and there was nobody else there, so it would have been probably a good time to eat there. It was a new barbecue place by my old comic shop, and I had burnt ends. Oh my God, they were good. I had a burnt end sandwich.
Nice.
And I know they're not healthy for you, but damn, was it good. Holy moly.
Well, if everything continues to be going in the right direction, then we could have restaurants open to sit down by June 30th. That would be the earliest possible date.
We could sit down. It just they have to comply to the regulations. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
You have to have 6 feet between each table, and it's got to, I don't know, if you were ordering it somewhere, you had to have placeholders so people stand 6 feet apart, and then all the wait staff has to wear masks.
Oh, well, I'll stick to takeout.
Yeah, I mean it's fine. You know, I'm with you, Chris. I'm happy that that's happening, assuming that people can be smart about it and we don't get an influx in cases. But I'm with you that I don't need to test it out.
People aren't going to be smart about it. I mean, look at the state of the world right now.
They're not smart in general. You're absolutely right. But just before we hang up, Mike, I just want to tell you, you'd be impressed with me. I went online to buy something on Amazon, and I happened to see that the Blu-ray Last Starfighter was $5.99, so I bought it.
Oh, yeah, that's a
$5.99,
great movie.
That's an awesome price!
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Yep, I haven't watched that in 20 years.
I wish they'd have a comic book on that.
Well, they have a miniseries.
Do they?
I thought so. I thought it was two issues.
That's based on the movie.
Yeah. Oh, it's three.
Yeah, I'm talking about like continuing the story.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
I thought that movie did okay. I had IMDb it too.
I like that movie.
To see why the hell we didn't ever have a sequel.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
I didn't think it was that big of a budget.
I'm sure it wasn't.
It's a guy who played video games.
All right. I'm going to go.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
All right. You too.
Bye. Bye. Bye.